Hey folks, happy holidays and welcome to episode 85 of the GVG cast. After a few weeks away, I am back in the host seat. My name is Ash Paulson and I am joined by my very good friend and GVG partner, Steve Bowling. Man, how are you doing? It's been a couple of weeks since we've done the show.
Yeah, I'm doing good. You know, I missed last week's show. I had a headache. I wasn't feeling too great. And of course, my absence led to having to cancel the show. So this episode of GVG Cast is fortunately 100% Discord free. So
yes.
we will not be going down even if Discord can't manage to keep up. But yeah, it's been a good couple of weeks. I've been working nonstop in my studio, which is getting ready. Like, it's inching closer to me moving from this room that you guys have seen me in since I moved to a proper studio setup, which I'm really, really excited for.
Nice. I'm so looking forward to seeing that studio, man. You've been teasing us about it in our partner chat, and I can't wait.
It's coming together. It's coming together. I'm really grateful to the folks at Elgato. They sent me like just a literal truckload of stuff to put in there to help make it. In fact, hold on. I'll show you all this.
Oh, nice.
I got an early Christmas present from my friends at Elgato. They sent me their new teleprompter.
Oh, sick.
So that'll be really how I'm interacting with y'all from the new studio, because I haven't shared it yet, but I've built kind of like a mini set for GVG Cast in there.
Awesome.
Where I actually have like my game collection, and I have a camera and lights set up, and I've got all my gaming memorabilia behind me and like a cozy chair to sit in. So I'm really, really excited for what it's going to be like.
Oh, that's so cool, man. Yeah, I really want to see that studio in person. I've been trying to like find ways maybe to make it out there for the Seattle Sonic Symphony at the beginning of the month.
Oh, yeah.
In January.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at that point, maybe I could see your studio in person. I don't know that I can make it happen, but I want to go so badly with you because it was such an amazing experience when I went with my wife here in LA. And I want to be there with you because I know you and I are both like the hardest core of Sonic fans. And
hell,
I want to see your reactions to that amazing show.
Oh, I want to so bad. I'm definitely going to do my best to make it out there for the symphony and just grab like an Airbnb for the night or something. But yeah,
do
if you're
it.
In town, I'll bring you back to the studio and show you what we got, because it's definitely
cool.
Shaping up. I've got a big sofa, so a lot of us can play games in there. I'm going to have like a setup with a couple of chairs and like mics at every station so that we can do podcast content in there. It's really exciting. It's not like a Kind of Funny or an Easy Allies, but it's what I have, and I'm very proud of it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Well, I hope you can make it because it is amazing. I'll certainly let you know if I can somehow make it out there. I am already traveling next month for MAGFest, so don't know if I can swing both trips just monetarily, but
yeah,
we'll see if we can make something happen. We'll have
PAX for sure. And
that's
so
true.
So my hope is still that after PAX, we can all converge on my place and do some wrap-up videos and some podcast episodes and then just generally like hang out.
That would be awesome. Well, as for where the rest of us are, Daniel and Brandon are both wrapped up with some family stuff. One or both of them may be jumping into the show a little later while we're live. We'll see. No promises, but we'll see. Derek is with some family for the holidays, but he'll be back next week. And John, of course, he better be asleep. It's like 1 a.m. for him. So we hope he's asleep. And once again, we are sorry that we missed last year's show. When Derek runs the show, we usually do it through Discord. And as you all know, Discord crapped out and had its outage at the worst possible moment. So we were planning to go live last week, but we just couldn't swing it because of that Discord outage. But Steve, my man here, we're using a different platform, so we don't have to worry about Discord crap in the bed today. So
that's right.
Hell yeah. And of course, we've got some birthday shout outs to do for our patrons. We have quite a few from both last week and this week. So happy belated birthday to Z Patty, who celebrated theirs on the 16th. Jess, who celebrated theirs on the 17th. Refined Pet on the 18th. Super Gamer Dude 101 on the 18th as well. And Jim Wakelin on the 18th. Three patron birthdays on the 18th. And then Amajish on December 20th. So happy, happy birthday to all of you. And thank you so much for being in our community. You guys are all awesome.
Yeah, happy birthday, everyone.
Yeah, so it's the holidays, man. And there wasn't too much news from the week, at least, you know, positive news from the week to talk about. And we'll get to a little stuff later. But this is just kind of a vaguely holiday themed episode of the GVG cast. And so I wanted to ask you, what are your plans for the holidays, man? We're in the midst of them already.
Yeah, so unfortunately for me, my day job requires that I'm pretty much working every day that isn't actually Christmas. So I'll be doing a lot of work. But
Okay.
on a more personal note, this is my first Christmas in my home with my kids. For those of you that don't know, part of the change in my surroundings is that I actually like bought a house. And I want to be extra clear about the fact that this, while I do have a day job that kind of keeps me in the black, so to speak, in terms of my earnings and my day-to-day stability, I absolutely could not have bought this house without the generous support of the GVG community. Like that little bit extra that this channel helps me bring in month to month helped put me over the top to get the mortgage on this house. So
That's awesome,
I
man.
owe all of you out there watching a debt of gratitude. Like I wouldn't own a home without you. And so thank you guys. Like you're all part of this. And it means a lot for me to be able to, be in this place. And if you've followed us since 2020, when we started, I've made like an annual habit of moving at this point. So
Right.
ha actually owning this place, hopefully that means that those days are behind me and that I'll just be here and I'll get to improve and make this place better. So I'm excited to have my first Christmas in this place where I will hopefully have many, many more with my children. So it's really going to be, a family focused holiday, just me and the kids, doing typical stuff, baking cookies, making food, watching movies, definitely playing video games. I'm looking forward to
Nice.
catching up on the best games from 2023 that I didn't play. Like Alan Wake 2 is screaming my name, Final Fantasy
Oh, yeah.
16. I'm hoping to get through at least a couple of those over it my admittedly short break, but yeah, I'm super excited. How about you, man?
I am going to be mainly just kind of sticking around here for the holidays. My wife and I are going to be spending Sunday, I believe, with my parents. And we're just going to be, hanging around, eating, watching some movies, probably just hanging out. And then on Monday, we're going to be spending the day with her family. We'll be, doing the same thing, eating, playing games, just kind of
Nice.
having cool family time. And they want me to bring my Switch over to her family's house. So we'll probably end up playing some Mario Kart, some Mario Party. Family bonds will be shattered. It'll be very wholesome and great. I unfortunately none of them other than my wife is actually starting to get into Smash, which is really cool for me. She really wants
Nice.
to get better, so she started kind of properly training with Palutena. But unfortunately, nobody else in her family is a Smash player, so I don't think I'm gonna be able to convince them to play that. But I can at least get some Kart going and some Mario Party
You know,
going.
I have turned my Switch for family gatherings into like almost exclusively a Jackbox
And
and
Jackbox,
everybody 1-2 Switch machine. Like,
yeah,
I cannot tell you how insanely well those games go over when I bring them to people's
same.
houses.
I had a holiday potluck at our place last year just for a bunch of friends, local friends, and of course we played Smash, but Jackbox came out very soon after that, and that was pretty much the game of the night or the games of the night for the rest of the potluck. So Jackbox always goes over well. I haven't actually played Everybody 1-2 Switch yet. I know we
It is
did. Yeah, you like the.
underrated, man. It's
Yeah.
really underrated.
That's what she said. We did one with a bunch of our patrons in our server, in our Discord server, but I wasn't able to make it for that, so I didn't get to experience it.
Yeah, one of these days I still want to pull together like 100 players to just play like a full lobby with that game and see what the hell that's
I would
like
love
because
to.
I think it would be nuts, but it would be really fun. Yeah. I think Nintendo, come on. You've got billions of dollars. I know you don't want to promote this game, but if for some
Right?
reason you decide you want to, like Miyamoto really likes the horse mask guy, just fly us and like 98 of our friends to the same place and we'll do it for you.
Hell yeah. Azran in our live audience chat says they forced their students to play Everybody 1-2 Switch the other day, but they enjoyed it. So it was a good forcing, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't know if this is still the case, but Whisperil also mentioned a little earlier in our live audience chat that you sounded a little quiet.
I'm
I
always
don't.
quiet. No, I think I know what that is. I've been kind of futzing with my mic within OBS and trying to learn. Like I actually worked with an audio engineer, who is a friend of the channel, and I asked them to help me kind of sort some microphone stuff out, but
Okay.
it is just kind of a weird thing where this mic sounds quieter in OBS than it sounds in my recordings. It's a little difficult for me to get it to like the sweet spot, but I'm working on
it. Gotcha. Speaking of Whisperil, I do want to also send over some good vibes their way because they did mention that their household has been ravaged by COVID. Everyone's okay, but all plans are basically out the window. So yeah, just some good vibes would be greatly appreciated. Well, have all the good vibes that we can possibly give you because that sucks. I mean, getting COVID always sucks, but especially during the holidays, that's such a bummer. So
I got it once from a close friend and it sucked. I was very mad. But hopefully you start to feel better. Holidays is a bad time to get that.
Yeah. And also, another note, BC King Games in our YouTube chat said that their dog passed away on Wednesday. So they're glad they could catch us live and surround themselves with a good vibe. Well, we hope we're helping you with such a difficult time in your life because that is just the hardest thing to go through. Anybody who knows, knows. So, we love you and hope you're keeping well out there and hang in there, BC King.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've got some, we got some super chats rolling in here. Our good friend RecBCQ is joining us live for the first time in a while. And they're glad to be able to. Happy holidays to all of you. Well, thank you, Rec. Happy holidays to you as well. And thank you for the $5.
Is it Rye Royal now? I think.
Right.
Am I thinking of the same person? I don't know.
I think they're separate. I could be wrong. I think they're separate people, but I could be wrong.
I always know if it's the hat icon. I can't see chat right now. For some reason, my OBS decided that chat was not important for me to see. But
We've got two super chats for a combined $22 from Disney Duncan. Thank you so much for your generosity, Duncan. And they are asking, is Deadpool 3 our most anticipated movie of next year? They've been on several sites and all their number ones are Deadpool 3. Do you think it'll be something MCU fans love? Will it succeed or flop? And it certainly is their most anticipated movie. It's not quite. It would be, but there's another three that I'm looking forward to that's coming out next year. Steve, I think you know what I'm talking about. It is, of course, Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
Yep.
And that's coming out like next year today or something. It's like really close to coming. It's like December 20 something. It's very close.
With how good Sonic 2 was. Yeah. I'm there with you.
Yeah. So Sonic 3 is my most anticipated movie of the year, but Deadpool 3 is up there. And I think it'll be something Marvel fans love just because we're getting, you know, Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool along with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. What more could you ask for? That's going to be so much fun. Like, I feel like that's going to be an incredibly entertaining 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I think it'll be a good movie. I'm just, I mean, I'll be honest. I think being a parent and being a single parent has led me down the path of not really getting hyped for any movie releases because I know that I most often don't get to see them. But it is a little different now because I live near my family and I get invited to the movies by people now. So I'm like, all right. Like I saw Godzilla and I didn't think I'd get to see that in theaters at all. And it was excellent.
I heard it was so good.
Yeah, it is definitely, it lives up to the hype big time. It is nice. Such a good movie.
I've been a little bit not caught up on movies lately. The last one my wife and I went to see was The Marvels, which we really enjoyed despite it not doing well, you know, commercially. We really liked it. But yeah, we haven't seen anything since then. We're kind of, she wanted to see the Hunger Games prequel. I've heard about Godzilla, of course. There's just, I'm just behind on movies right now. But maybe I can catch up over the holidays a little bit. Shadow the Cat 88 with $20. Thank you so much, Shadow. Hey, Ash, just wanted to say thanks for the constant love shown to Rhythm Heaven. I got into it and played through Megamix on the 3DS. I enjoyed it so much that I bought Fever as well. I understand your love of it so much now. Well, thank you. I'm so glad. I'm glad to always bring more Rhythm Heaven fans into the fold. I only wish Nintendo was still a fan of Rhythm Heaven. They don't seem to care about it anymore. I want a new one so bad, but you know, in the meantime, at least I've got great rhythm games like Hi-Fi Rush and Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line to play. And if you haven't played either of those, you should do it because they're both amazing rhythm games. And then finally for now, we've got Thomas Nerds Out with $5. Thank you, Thomas. Your daily reminder to play Xenoblade Chronicles 3 and Future Redeemed. I finished both this year and I flarkin' loved every second that I played. Well, I could not agree with you more. Xenoblade 3 was my game of the year last year and Future Redeemed actually made my list this year, which all of our individual game of the year list videos are out except for Daniel's on the channel. So after we're done, if you want some game of the year goodness, go check out the whole crew's game of the year videos. They're a lot of fun.
Please do.
Yeah, please, please do. So you were mentioning over the holidays, right, Steve?
FF16. Yeah. I started it up today And I say started up, but continued my existing save for the first time in months. Alan Wake 2, I've been playing kind of in a more contemporary way. Like I picked it up because, and honestly, it was all Brandon heaping praise on it. Really convinced me that I needed to give it a shot. And it was interesting because I was like, oh, I should play Alan Wake 1 and I should do this. And I talk a lot behind the scenes here at GVG about how we need to be more just like, instead of obsessing over doing things the right way. And I know this sounds weird, but just doing them. And, and I'm trying to take that approach to how I play games because I'm like, okay, I could tell myself I need to play Alan Wake 1 Remastered and then American Nightmare. But then in reality, I'll just never play any of it. And so I'm like, I'm just going to buy two. And there is something there's something kind of refreshing about that sense that you get when you buy a game versus when a publisher or somebody reaches out to you and they're like, here, please play our game. Because once your money's on the line, you're like, I'm going to play this. I am determined that I have to play this. And I'm not saying we don't play games we get codes for. We absolutely do. But I think there is a difference between when, you know, and it's true of all things, like when somebody gives you something and it doesn't cost you personally anything versus when you shell out the money and you're like, okay, now I need to get my personal money's worth out of this.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, I need to play Alan Wake 2 because I put $80 into that game and I demand satisfaction. So that one right now seems to be holding my attention more, and it's really hard for me to tell whether it's because it's the better game or because Square, or because, you know, I got my copy of 16 for free from Square a while back. But yeah, I'm very interested in how these work out. Of course, you know, I'm also just in this period of, it's really weird when a big game you want is on the horizon, just out of reach. And of course, I think I speak for both of us when that's Rebirth. And so I'm like, but I got to power through the games that I'm interested in so that I can get before February so that I can get Rebirth and I can play the hell out of that.
Yeah, I would ideally like to. I picked up FF16 over Black Friday for half off. I got it essentially for like $30, which is great. Or $35, which is great. And so I'm gonna really try to play that and Spider-Man 2. Those are my two biggest, like, well, and Alan Wake 2, but I've never played the first, and I hate playing games out of order, but like you, Steve, I feel like if I don't just play two, I'll probably never go back and play one and the DLC first. But I feel like my biggest holes in my gaming year this year, I'm pretty proud of my top 10, but my biggest holes were FF16 and Spider-Man 2, and I guess also Alan Wake 2. But I would like to at least knock two of those three out before Rebirth hits, because once Rebirth hits, it doesn't matter what I'm playing unless I'm playing something I'm assigned. It doesn't matter. Everything is off the table once Rebirth hits. That's going to be it for me. And so I would really like to be able to have 16 and Spider-Man 2 in my cap. And I don't know about 16. I've heard, you know, kind of things both ways in terms of how I'll, maybe where I'll ultimately land on it. But I'm almost certain that had I had time to play Spider-Man 2, that it would have landed somewhere in my top 10 list. I don't know where, but I'm pretty sure it would have landed somewhere. I played Miles Morales for the first time this year and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I played it first, though.
My strat with games this year was to essentially, well, I started out just trying to play everything, and I learned really quickly. I know what you're smiling at. my strat at the beginning of this year was to just try to play a little bit of everything. And we were doing Game of the Month, and unfortunately there's like two reasons why Game of the Month really kind of fell off. One was that it was a lot of effort, and two was that it was very little return. The videos just didn't do great. So it was really hard to justify like spending a whole month playing every small release that came out.
Right.
When we were getting like 5,000 views on it. You know, it's just like I could spend the time either supporting making other videos or making original videos that were wholly mine that would probably do a whole lot better.
Right.
But so my strategy quickly evolved to just be, I'm going to map out like the tentpole releases for the years, the ones that I kind of most people have their eyes on for potential game of the year contention. And then I'm going to make sure I play those. And even then I missed a couple. Right. You know, like Alan Wake 2 was a clear miss on my part. Like, I did not see that one being such a strong contender for Game of the Year from an industry standpoint at the time that it launched. And maybe that's just because I didn't play Alan Wake 1.
Same
for Baldur's Gate 3. Like, it completely surprised me. And I'm not saying that as like an aspersion of the quality of the game. It's just I wasn't aware of Baldur's Gate, really.
Yeah.
And so when it came out, I was like, neat, like a Dungeons and Dragons game. That's cool. And then it just kind of the wave of critical acclaim and the fan reaction just hit me like a tidal wave. Like, I had no idea that it was going to go off the way that it did. Probably in hindsight, as Dad Alpha Lion in our live audience chat points out, I probably should have shelved Starfield and spent more time with Baldur's Gate 3. Now, I don't know that it would have changed my opinion. I'm not going to lie. And I know that, man, fans have been coming at me in the comments for saying I don't like the game. And I'm sorry, but it's just not my kind of game. Like, and I don't think there's
How
a problem.
How dare you?
I know, right? How dare I not like one game of many?
Yeah.
You know, but if it's your thing, it's your thing. And that's super cool. Like, I'm glad people like it. But yeah, it just didn't work for me, and I don't think there's a huge problem with that. But I think that that's one that threw me for a loop big time, and I wish I'd been on it sooner so that I could have given it more time by the end of the year. But yeah, it's just it was an interesting year, and I tried really hard to at least try every Game of the Year contender, and I think I got most of them. I gave all of them like a shot. Like, I bought
That's
Baldur's
how I feel,
Gate 3,
yeah.
I bought Alan Wake 2, I tried them. I think Alan Wake 2 is the only case out of the games that I played where it likely would have ended up higher on my list had I had more time to play more of it.
Right. Yeah, and same with you. Baldur's Gate 3 is a weird one. One of my best friends, whom you know, Steve Jansen, who he was talking to me about his Game of the Year and some of our Game of the Year stuff, and he's a big WRPG D&D guy. He loves that dark fantasy setting so much, and so he was like, "How dare you, Baldur's? You didn't play." And I'm just like, "Dude, I don't doubt that it's as amazing as everyone says. It wasn't on my radar before 3 came out because I'm just not a D&D guy. That's just not my thing. And I'm glad that it's so awesome. And I love the underdog story it represents for the studio. I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not trying to snub it or anything. It's just not my thing. And I don't want to be fake. You know, I don't want to force myself and be fake about it and be like, yeah, this game, I love it. When I don't, it's just not my thing as much. I may end up feeling the same way a little bit about FF16. We'll see. But yeah, it kind of blindsided me as well, but I also don't feel the need to really go out of my way for that one specifically because I just know that's not just my thing, you know, and sometimes you just know.
Yeah, I mean, I like to step out of my comfort zone and try, but this was one case where I looked at the game, I was like, probably not for me, but given the fact that we are like an outlet and we're giving out awards, I wanted to try it for the sake of somebody on the channel having tried it. And I kind of knew going in that it probably wasn't going to be for me, but I was like, you know what? Given all the hype around it and the vast amount of fans, like if you look at our Game of the Year videos, everyone's like, why don't they mention Baldur's Gate 3? Like every single one of them, right? And fortunately there are some folks out there who have watched our Game of the Year videos and have heard John mention that, you know, he doesn't buy digital and he's waiting for physical, and me mentioned that I did play it and it just didn't make the cut for me. So we have people out there kind of correcting the record. But when I saw that huge fan reaction, I was like, okay, somebody from the channel needs to have tried it. Like, because I don't think we can, in good faith, like, let it go by and just be like, yeah, none of us played it. You know, so,
yeah.
I mean, whether you like my opinion or not, and I get the strong impression that you don't, you know, at least I gave it a shot. At least somebody here at GVG gave it a shot. And I think that's the best you guys can really hope for, because we're going to try the game. You know, I don't want to say this is the best game of the year unequivocally, and no, I didn't play that other one that most people think is the best one. So,
yeah, and I should. I will eventually try it. Like, even if I would have wanted to, there's no way I could have fit that in this year as well, in addition to missing Spider-Man 2, you know, like that was such a big priority for me, and I still missed it because there's only so much free gaming time in the year. But it is something that I would like to at least try it, so I know kind of what it's all about. I just know that from everything I've seen, I'm like, I don't get it, but I'm sure that if I sit down and play it, maybe something will spark. Who knows? Maybe not, though. Like what you said, it didn't really do much for you. So, but you're right. I should try. It's just a matter of having the time to try everything I want to, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I am definitely going to be getting into some FF16 over the holidays. And I did actually ask for Spider-Man 2. If I don't get it, of course, I'll just pick it up down the road as soon as I can play it. But if I end up getting Spider-Man 2 over the holidays, I'm going to jump into that as soon as I can, because, man, I want to play it so badly. I feel like I've been missing out so much, and I can't wait. Speaking of missing out, I finally did correct an issue that I had for a little while earlier this year, because, as you know, I played a ton of Tears of the Kingdom, a ton of it. I loved it. Obviously, go check out my Game of the Year video to see where it ranked. But I spent a ton of time in that game. But then right as I was about to finish it, other stuff came out, like Sea of Stars. So I took a break. And then I just kept getting, you know, then Mario Wonder happened, and then Mario RPG. So it took me a long time, but I did finally get back and finish Tears of the Kingdom. And man, as you were telling me months ago, like, oh my God, yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything, of course, but man, that is one of the best finales and endings and set pieces Zelda has ever had. Oh, so good. Yeah. Absolutely worth it.
You know, and I'll just spoil that mine, my video. My video has been out for several days now, so that's fine. But Tears of the Kingdom ended up winning for me. And I got a lot of questions about that. Why, you know, because this year I've been on the Spider-Man 2 hype train for most of it. You know, Tears of the Kingdom came and went, and I played it and I loved it. But you know, after that point, once that Zelda itch had been scratched, Spider-Man 2 was like all I could think about.
Yeah.
You know, I played and beat and loved Spider-Man 2. I 100%ed that game. And at the time when I beat it and I published the review, I thought, like, oh, this is it. Like, this is the best game I played this year. But I'm really not content to let, like, a three-month-old opinion be where I land, you know?
Right.
Like, I think it's incumbent on me as a self-proclaimed video game critic to re-examine those opinions, you know, after the sheen of recency bias has faded. And I played through not in their complete states, but I played through significant portions of both Tears of the Kingdom and Spider-Man 2 in the week running up to making my video for Game of the Year. And it was that final set piece that put Tears of the Kingdom over the top for me, because when I went back and I re-examined how those made me feel, how the ending of Tears of the Kingdom versus the ending of Spider-Man 2 really made me feel, I was like, it is, when I take those games as a sum total of the experience, I will say that neither game is perfect. And no game is, let's be real. No game is perfect. They're the product of many people working together. But I would say that the difference between them, for me personally speaking, is so minuscule. It's like a hair's breadth. Like they Tears of the Kingdom just barely takes that edge over, because, I mean, on one hand, Tears of the Kingdom has so many great moments, and there's so much technical wizardry on display.
Oh my God, yes.
But, I mean, if you want to knock Tears of the Kingdom, there are lots of valid complaints you could make. The game slows to a crawl when you use Ultra Hand. There's, you know, the depths is interesting, but ultimately very empty. And the sky is similarly somewhat barren, though being a really cool concept. Whereas with Spider-Man 2, you have these amazingly well-made characters, you know, that with phenomenal performances, you have a true current gen showcase, you have a lot going for that game, but it also falls flat in its own unique areas, you know, and this isn't a review of these two games, so I'll cut it there. But, ultimately, like, if there was ever a year where I was like, oh, they both get it, I seriously considered for a while doing the kind of fake out and being like, they both win. But then I was like, we can't do that. People hate it when you do that.
You would have been roasted for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, what you told me about the finale, what you teased, you know, like just telling me how great it was, absolutely lived up to what you were. It was so.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. And I was in the dark. I was by myself, had headphones on. It was just me and the game. It was transcendent. It was so good. We got a few more super chats rolling in. Y'all are so kind. $4.99 from Brando Tooney. I love that name. And it's your first super chat ever. Thank you so much. Yeah. Happy holidays. Look forward to more good vibes in 2024. Well, we will certainly be bringing them. Thank you. Jacob Tucker with $5. Thank you so much. January is going to be interesting for me. I'll be seeing Sonic Symphony, and 10 days later, I'm getting surgery to repair a hernia. Good vibes, please. Well, I wish you were seeing the Sonic Symphony after. I wish you could have that to look forward to after your surgery, but either way, enjoy the show. It's amazing, and all the best to you on your upcoming surgery. I'm sure it'll go just fine, but sending you good vibes for sure.
Yeah.
Disney Duncan is back with $5 more. Thank you. Asking if Jonathan Majors should be recast or go with a different villain for Avengers 5 and Secret Wars. I don't know that they can go away from the whole Kang thing at this point, so I imagine they'll just have to recast him.
Well, I mean, they recast Rhodey very early on in the MCU. You know, when Cuba Gooding Jr. just wanted too much money, according to Marvel. I don't know what too much money is in Hollywood, but according to that was the dispute. They just got Don Cheadle, and he's been War Machine ever since. So, yeah, it's been done in the MCU. It can be done again.
Exactly. Next up is Laxnor with $9.99. Thank you so much. Can't catch the show live because today's my birthday. Pokemon does a good job of saying happy birthday in game. What other games, if any, do this too that you guys like? Well, first of all, happy birthday.
Yeah.
I'm Love really thinking name, by the about way. The hardware, like the 3DS and Wii U both celebrated your birthday in fun ways, especially
Did
the
they?
Wii U.
Really? I don't remember.
Yeah, the Wii U, when you boot it up on your birthday, the Wada Wada Plaza thing, all the Miis, I think you get some confetti and all the Miis would do like a little waving at you, little thing. It would just be different than your normal boot up sound.
Yeah, Azran got me nailed to a cross with this one. Animal Crossing is the easy answer, and that's the one I was going to go with. Yeah. When I reviewed New Horizons, you know, like big pandemic feelings going on right then, and I got my little birthday party in there, it choked me up a little bit because I couldn't see my friends, so it was very nice to get that. But yeah, Animal Crossing, it's just wholesome for me. That's the one I'd go with.
Yeah, also Cutie Caitlin in our patron chat makes a great point. The Wii message board, the Wii message board did that too. That was cool. I think Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line also, it has bonuses for every Final Fantasy game's birthday, but I think if you log in on your birthday, you get a little bonus as well. Don't quote me on that, but I feel like I remember that's the case.
Nice.
But could be wrong. Next up, Mighty Invincible with $4.99. Thank you. I hadn't touched Tears of the Kingdom for months, but I just recently heard the main theme of the game again, and I got a strong urge to replay it from back to back. Yeah, I don't blame you. I use that main theme as one of the songs in my Game of the Year video for that portion, and it just gets me every time.
Yep.
Kaiser the Fighting Demon with $2. Thank you. Asking Twintel from ARMS versus Manal from Street Fighter VI.
Twintel.
I think so.
Literally bends time. Like
that's true. She does. She has witch time, and she can keep Manal at bay with her hair.
Yeah,
Manal just won't be able to get in.
And Manon's a grappler. Yeah, it just wouldn't work out for her. What's she gonna do? Kick hair? Like
yeah. And then actually one more from Kaiser with $2 more. Thank you. Asking Steve from Minecraft versus Jonesy from Fortnite. Based on how broken Steve is in Smash, I'm going to go just with Steve by default. He can do crazy things in that game.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know what Jonesy can do. I don't know anything.
I mean,
about
he really can just shoot guns. But
that's it, right?
I mean, if you think about it, I'm a Steve, and if I got shot, I wouldn't want to fight anymore. So,
yeah.
But if we're talking Smash rules, Joker clearly has a gun, and Steve can tank many, many bullets from Joker. So
exactly.
Yeah, I guess Steve would take it.
Fox has a gun. Yeah, I think Steve takes it. I think so. All right, so there was one bit of news from the week, Steve, that I wanted to get into a little discussion with
Ooh.
You about. Yeah, because I know we are big Sega fans. We're both really looking forward to this revival of all these, you know, underutilized Sega IPs that's coming. We had them the first wave announced at the Game Awards. And so one of the things that's come out about one of these upcoming games since then is that the new Jet Set Radio game is going to be open world. And again, as friends who were both big Sega fans, I wanted to get your take on how you feel about Jet Set Radio going open world, apparently.
I am. So with regard to the open world thing, I'm cautiously optimistic because I think it's a good direction. I think as a younger person, when I played Jet Set Radio, to me, that was an open world game, even though it was more of like a what we would call these days, like an open zone game. But back then I was like, oh, you can go all kinds of places and graffiti all kinds of stuff, you know? So it seems to me that they would just be removing like the loading screens between the zones and maybe just ditching the hub altogether. So I'm not too worried about that. But when I look at Jet Set Radio, I've got two concerns. My two concerns are, one, it ditched the art style, which to me was right. The most attractive thing about that series. You know, I don't know how it was in the U.S. I didn't buy, this is me being a damn hipster about this game, but I didn't buy the American version. I didn't have Jet Grind Radio with the Rob Zombie tracks. I had Jet Set Radio.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad is a name that won out over here now as well. You know, well, it did back in the Xbox. Jet Grind Radio was just the Dreamcast version. They're like, that was dumb. Let's fix it.
Yeah.
But there was so much style in Jet Set Radio for the Dreamcast. I remember getting the Japanese copy, and you know, this was back in the day when games were still expected to ship with instruction books. And of course, Jet Set Radio, like so many games of that generation, had an instruction book. However, Sega in Japan printed it on like intentionally like really thick, gritty paper.
Yeah.
So like the Japanese booklet is like this textural weird feeling to it that is so like in line with just the overall style of the game. Like Sega was so clearly going for I don't want to say style over substance, because there is great substance to the game, but in a sense that's what they were doing. Like they wanted you to know from even just touching the booklet that this game was different to others. And yeah. I love that about it. But when I look at these screenshots of Jet Set Radio, like this new one, I'm like, it blends in. It blends in with like in the sea of Unreal Engine
it
games
does.
That are out there. And
yeah.
I dislike that. I would not be surprised if this was built on Unreal. Like if you look at screenshots of No More Heroes 3, which also had a weirdly similar problem. Like No More Heroes 1 and 2 were very stylized, cel-shaded games. And then 3 is like a plasticky Unreal Engine game.
Yeah.
And I don't want that for Jet Set. Like Jet Set's defining trait is its pop. Like its use of color and contrast and thick outlines and just yeah. aggressive, like, you know, the characters feel like graffiti in a way. And so I hope that Sega kind of sees people like us talking about this and go, all right, let's rethink the art direction a bit. Like it's 50% there. The character models, the animations, those all look well, like, I don't want to say the character models because obviously that implies the art, but like the animation that we see, you know, Professor K looks really good. It's just the art style they've applied to that model. And so if they brought it back to like the Dreamcast cel shaded style, I'd be so happy.
Same. I think, and I completely agree. It does kind of just look like everything else in the sea of Unreal games out there right now. And I think that if that is how it ends up looking upon its final release, I feel like people are going to look at a game like Hi-Fi Rush and be like, no, that's what this game should have looked like.
You see, though, I saw Cutie Caitlin
or something along that
in our live audience. And I agree in one respect, in that it captures the cel shaded essence, but the art style,
the art itself is different.
Yeah. Like Jet Set Radio had a much more aggressive looking art style, whereas Hi-Fi Rush looks like a Saturday morning cartoon. And I want like the color palette of Hi-Fi Rush, but I want that Jet Set Radio art style. In fact, you know what? I think a great evolution of it, or a great comparison point would be, and this is going to sound real weird, in Mario Strikers for the Switch, when they do their super moves and like you got the crazy lines and all that. Like I would love to see Jet Set Radio with that kind of energy to it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's a path forward here, but a couple of these Sega games that they announced are a little concerning to me. And I have a feeling that we'll get further into that, but you know, Jet Set Radio, I definitely play it. I just hope that either by DLC or that they just come to their senses and realize that fans, you know, that the aggressive look of it was part of what made it as popular as it is. I hope that they realize that.
Same. And you mentioned some of the other stuff that you're concerned about. And I was actually going to mention one that I'm a little bit in particular concerned about. Now, of course, I was caught up in the hype during the announcement of the Game Awards. And of course, I'm happy to see that Streets of Rage is still alive.
Thank you. That's where I was.
But yeah, so now it's called Streets of Rage Revolution is what they're calling it now.
And it looks bad.
I want to be excited, but I don't know about them making it a 3D brawler, man. I don't want to say that I'm opposed to them making it 3D on principle. Yes, I think, just because I'm a snob for Streets of Rage as it is, I would prefer it to stay 2D. But I'm okay with IPs taking risks and doing something new, and maybe they could make something great out of it. My issue is that Streets of Rage 4 proved that it could not only stay 2D, but it could excel in a modern context in 2D. That is my favorite brawler of all time. I didn't expect it when it was first revealed, and then I played it and I'm like, this is they've perfected Streets of Rage with this, and I don't know why you don't just go back to the same devs and have them do something else in that style. I'm just a little bit worried about it.
Well,
And
I've got something for you on that.
oh, well, that's true. Yeah, that's because now we know they're working on something else. But
Yeah,
why not both? Why can't
so
we have both?
Streets of Rage in particular in that presentation stood out to me as like looking pretty rough. I agree that it's not the perspective I want. Like, it's not the camera perspective I want. It's not the art style I want. It doesn't even look like I would argue technically even the genre that I want. Because Streets of Rage 4 just needed, like you said, kind of a copy paste follow up. Like, take what you did, make it better, and ship a
Somehow.
very similar game. Because Streets of Rage 4 was as close to perfection as we've gotten in the beat 'em up genre in a long time. And it even stands out in a sea of really great beat 'em ups that have released in the last couple years. Like, Turtles was fantastic. I love it, but I still like Streets more.
Me too.
Because
Me too.
Streets plays to the strengths of the genre in a modern context rather than leaning on nostalgia. And while those are both valid approaches, I just like the modern one more because it makes me feel like we're advancing the genre as opposed to playing to what made it popular back when it was the genre du jour in the 90s, right? But obviously we know that Lizard Cube can't be doing that because they are very obviously doing the new Shinobi game, which does look amazing.
It does look like it's the standout of everything we've seen so far of these new Sega revivals.
It is really, really impressive, the art that we've seen. Obviously Sega is holding back a lot with this game. But I anticipate that of the whole batch of games that we know of, because they said there are more IP revivals coming that they're working on, which
We actually got some trademarks for them, and I was going to mention that.
Oh,
So we
I
actually
want
have
to hear
some.
these because I don't know about that.
Yeah, so the ones we don't know about yet, but were revealed via trademarks are Alex Kidd, Afterburner, House of the Dead, Super Monkey Ball, and the one that I just hope they get perfectly, Outrun. A new
Oh,
Outrun game?
baby.
Oh my God, if they nail it, a new Outrun game would make me explode. Like,
I
oh.
need. Oh my gosh. Yes. For those of you saying that I'm not gonna read that verbatim, but I am very excited. You know what? I'll be right back. I'll show you. Hold on. Hold on.
Uh-oh, here we go. Afterburner though, yeah. Oh man, I want Afterburner and Outrun so badly. I'm not sure I trust House of the Dead for it, They've had a lot of chances to get House of the Dead right again since 4, and they haven't really. So the remake wasn't the business. So I don't know about that. Super Monkey Ball, I really liked Banana Blitz, so Monkey Ball, as long as you don't screw it up, I'm going to be pretty happy with no matter what. Monkey Ball is just great. But no, Outrun though. Outrun, baby. I love me some arcade racers, and Outrun is one of my favorites. And if they
I
nail
knew
it,
exactly where I had this.
nice. Hell
So
yeah.
I've been holding on to this for years, and getting a new one it would just be amazing. So
Afterburner is awesome. Yeah.
yeah, Afterburner. So my history with Afterburner, if you weren't there, and none of you were, audience, I know none of you were because your average age is like 20
Hey,
something.
I was there. I was
Our
there.
arcade machine for Afterburner was the shit.
Yeah, it
Like, it
was.
was a cockpit that you sat in that actually like pitched and yawed like while you were playing the game. My mom would take me to the arcade in the 80s, in the 80s, and she would only take us to arcades that had Afterburner so that she had something to play. Like,
Nice.
she would just pump quarters into that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is an incredible, incredible game. But yeah, all of those. All, Alex Kidd is great. Afterburner's great. I'm sorry, I lost you after Afterburner. What were the other ones that we're getting?
They are okay. So they're Alex Kidd, Afterburner, House of the Dead, Super Monkey Ball, and Outrun.
House of the Dead and Super Monkey Ball, I'm not sure about. I hope that doesn't have anything to do with Forever Entertainment.
I know, that's the thing. Is like I was saying while you were gone that they've had some chances to get House of the Dead right again after 4, and they have kind of failed every time they've done it. So, and it was really just the remake, I guess. Overkill was pretty good, actually. Overkill was wild. But yeah, that remake, and apparently they're working on a House of the Dead 2 remake as well. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Like, just re-release the first 4 games in a compilation. They're basically perfect as they are. Yeah. So I don't know if I trust House of the Dead. Super Monkey Ball got back on track with Banana Blitz. So I feel like, you know, maybe Monkey Ball will be fine. I feel like, you know, Monkey Ball's pretty consistent. I think.
Outrun, though. Oh, man.
You know.
Listen to me, Sega. Please, please.
I know.
Get somebody that excels in 2D art to do this. Just trust me. It will. I know it'll be cheaper. I know it will be cheaper to make it in 3D. But just get some really good 2D art for that. And go heavy on like the crazy synthwave stuff, man. Like give me all the 80s ass tracks to drive around to, and I will buy that game day one.
Absolutely. It's not even a question. One of the games I go back to still and play most is the Sega Ages version of Outrun on my Switch. I love booting up Sega Ages Outrun and just playing that game at just that perfect 60 FPS and just vibing to that amazing music. Outrun is just, it's the best, and we don't have enough great arcade racers today anymore, period. So I really, really hope they nailed it. And you were talking about the Afterburner arcade machine, man, and I was going to bring up the fact that I used to have an arcade when I was younger near me that had the Outrun 2 SP full cabinet with the haptic seats that you're in. Like nice. the head-to-head, like, two-player versus haptics. It was so, you've played it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Outrun 2 in the arcade when you have that special machine. Oh, man, it's so good. And then there's also Outrun Online Arcade for the Xbox. It was Xbox Live Arcade, and it's still stuck on that platform. And it was such a good game, too. And it's one of the few games that wasn't carried forward to Series X via backcompat. So you literally can't play it on anything other than 360 or an emulator, I guess. But I'm like, yes, please bring this series back and do it right.
Yeah, I would love that.
Alex Kidd, I don't know. I can go either way. I feel like there's a chance. I'm always down for, you know, a new Sega platformer. But I think I'd maybe, you know, like them to bring back something like Rystar.
Yeah. I played Alex Kidd back in the day, and I played the remake that came out for Switch, and I thought it was all right, but I'm not itching for a new one.
Yeah. But it is too bad that, you know, I mean, of course, Sega has so many wonderful IPs. We're always going to complain until we get every single one. But it is a shame not to see Phantasy Star, Skies of Arcadia, Knights. I want a new Knights game that is actually faithful to the original game so badly. So badly. I love Knights. Also, yes, I agree, Cutie Caitlin, the Horizon games are good. I haven't played 2, but Horizon Chase Turbo, I spent a good amount of time on that a couple of years ago, and I really enjoyed it. Very, very, very Outrun-esque and arcadey. Very good.
Well, I have some breaking news.
Ooh, okay. We like breaking news.
We are joined by Brandon Miracle.
Hey, you made it.
Hello.
You made it.
And that's why we don't use Discord.
I'm slightly nice. Off center, I think, but I am here.
You are. I had to move you.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Let me fix you.
You caught us in the midst of geeking out about all the about Sega in general, but geeking out and also simultaneously sharing our concern for some of the upcoming Sega revivals like Streets of Rage Revolution. And yeah,
I was listening in the car on the way home.
Oh, OK. So, you know,
I'm up to speed.
OK, so, you know, what are you particularly looking forward to from or concerned about from these impending Sega revivals, man?
I guess it's. Just the fact that it's Sega, is that a mean thing to say?
no, it isn't. I say that as a lifelong Sega fan.
That's fair.
Definitely know. I mean, it's like, I don't know what to say. Like, hardware Sega was at least like dollar store Nintendo, but I feel like Sega these days is like Wish Nintendo, where they're like, we're gonna do your favorite thing, and we're gonna screw it up even worse than Nintendo would. Like we're gonna slap in something you really, really don't want.
For me, yeah. Like, it's cool that they're doing these things, but it is 100% not worth it if they're not going to be good end products, right? Like, I hope that they're letting devs take their time, put the energy into those games to make them what fans are hoping they are. Because otherwise, it's just going to be a bad look once this is all said and done.
Right. Agreed. I think that Sega has the potential to do it. I do think one of the things that is encouraging to me is that it appears that all of these are farmed out to outside studios. And they have had a recent spate of what I would call success with doing exactly that, like taking the Mercury Steam approach and letting a dev who's really passionate about the actual IP make the game. And I think, you know, with Streets of Rage and with other games like that, with Wonder Boy, we've gotten some pretty good results that I don't think Sega would have been able to produce on their own.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's it'll be interesting to see where things go. I really enjoyed the initial hype of the announcement, but you know, when I came back down to earth, I was like, okay, as exciting as it is that Sega is remembering that they have all these underutilized IPs that they're going to bring back, this could be done to varying degrees of success. So it's best to kind of, you know, temper our excitement. But hey, maybe the best will happen and they'll nail it. I mean, I've sure shown they can with Streets of Rage 4.
I find it funny that we're essentially talking about post-nut clarity with Sega. We're like,
yeah.
Once you come down from Sega dropping 5 games on you, you start to realize, oh no.
Also, dropping 5 games like that is very abnormal for any developer or publisher. So,
yeah,
you know, it's okay to be cautious going into this.
It is.
Well, and it may not even just be 5, because we were also talking about how there were other trademarks we didn't know about that came out after the Game Awards, like House of the Dead and Alex Kidd and Outrun and Super Monkey Ball. So it may not just be 5. So, yeah, but you're totally right. But Brandon, you got here at the perfect time, because the other thing I wanted to talk about concerns the Mario movie in a couple of different ways. First of all, late last week, Jack Black mentioned he's still waiting for Universal to greenlight a Mario movie sequel, which, of course, it's going to happen. But he also said something interesting. He said that he would personally prefer it to be a musical titled Bowser's Revenge. And I, as our resident Mario mega super giga fan, I want to know how you would feel about Super Mario Brothers 2 movie being a musical.
I like musicals.
Yeah.
You know, most of Disney's classic animated movies are musicals.
Right.
You know, Peaches was wildly well received amongst fans and non-fans.
Right.
So I can't say I'm against the idea. As long as the music and the musical numbers are just a backing to, you know, a competent narrative. Like,
sure.
If it's a Super Mario Galaxy movie, honestly, a musical would make sense for something like that.
I could see that, yeah.
The music in that game, or both those games, is fantastic, and I could see them getting away with it.
Wow.
But do I want that necessarily? Mm-hmm. No. But yeah. Did I want Illumination to make Super Mario Brothers? No.
fair point. That's kind of where I'm at, too. I mean, it's not what I would. And to be clear, I know there are people in live audience saying Jack Black doesn't make that decision. I know. I'm not saying he does. This isn't going to probably happen. It's just saying what he would like to happen. I'm with you, Brandon. I would be open to the concept. But yes, at least on the face of it, I don't think it's something I would like to have happen.
I actually think that Wonder would lend itself to a musical better. Because it has would. So yeah. much musical influence within the game itself, like mechanical musical influence.
Mm-hmm. You could look at Mario as a brand, and like, especially with Mario 3, which is a stage play, like Mario is inherently very performative and musical to begin with. So
right.
I don't think it's too out of the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least having, or yeah, I don't know if they'd go full on musical with it, but I could definitely see it being a kind of a thing where they have at least multiple songs and maybe not make it into a full musical. But yeah, no, it's true. You're very right though. Mario is very musical and performative at its base. That's a very good point.
Yeah. I also want to point out though that as I think there's kind of a myth that just because you're a famous person that you would know what's going on at every studio everywhere. You know, like, I don't necessarily...
Oh, yeah.
One, I firmly believe that there's already been a decision made about whether or not to make a Mario 2.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, totally. There's
no way they looked at, well, we made a billion dollars. Nah, we're not. We have to think about whether we want to make another billion.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. That decision, in my mind, has already been made, but I don't necessarily believe that they just reach out to the previous film stars the minute they greenlight the movie and get them involved, because obviously you need to write a script, you need to do pre-production, you need to figure out what the hell the movie is, and and then once you start firming those ideas up, then I'm sure that's when you start talking like to publicists and like, hey, we want Jack Black to do the Peaches thing again, you know, like, can we get him back? We're gonna do it. It's gonna be just 2 hours of him screaming Peaches. Right. But yeah, I believe that they likely have already made that decision, and there just hasn't been PR around it because it doesn't serve a good purpose right now. Like, I think when we hear about stuff like that, those decisions were made months prior. They're just now ready to tell you they were made. Like, oh yeah, we greenlit Mario 2 7 months ago, and we've been working on a script that whole time.
Yeah.
Also, like, that movie ends in a way that is very sequel baity, right? Like, they much had the plans to do this from the get-go.
Oh yeah.
And obviously, like you said, the buckets and buckets of money they made, it would just be stupid not to do another one.
Right.
Absolutely. And there's I completely agree with both of what you both just said. Now, on this note or on this topic, going back to Illumination for a second, they have reportedly or are planning to pitch Nintendo on a shared cinematic universe that would allegedly culminate in a Super Smash Brothers movie. And do you think, who knows if they have done it, if they're going to do it, but that's the report. Do you think Nintendo would bite on that?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think Illumination excels at family-friendly films.
Yeah.
And I think that Mario is very much proof of that. Like, it definitely has a bit more edge to it than I would have expected, but edge for like a kid's film or a family film.
I mean, the movie does have a fight scene with Donkey Kong, and the scene is literally called Smash.
Yeah, and he does his forward smash. Mario, like, literally does his forward smash,
I don't think they would set up a shared cinematic universe necessarily. Like, I don't think they're going to have to go that deep. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've already got Mario and Donkey Kong, and because of the space angle and certain elements of that movie, they could bring in Kirby, Star Fox. They don't really need to try. That said, like, Kid Icarus is a video game in the world of Mario. I guess Little Mac was there too, actually. I think if they did a Smash movie, there would be no setup. They would just make a Smash movie.
Like, yeah, I think that would be more likely. Yeah, I agree.
The thing where it falls apart for me, like Brandon said, is the shared cinematic universe bit, because there are characters that I think Illumination can do that could work, and most of them are the cuter characters, or at least the not-so-serious ones. But when I start thinking of, like, Star Fox, Legend of Zelda, Metroid, I can't imagine Illumination doing those in a way that makes them feel appropriate.
Yeah.
And we already know Illumination's not doing Zelda, so...
Right. It would have to be a separate Illumination, like, animated Zelda, which I also can't see.
It would be weird for them to pitch two Zeldas at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Zelda has never been a film before. Like,
yeah.
If anything, I would see Zelda getting an animated series before that. Another one, not counting the one we have already.
Right.
Well, excuse me, princess.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, you know, going back to the musical thing, Donkey Kong Country has proven it can work as a musical, depending on how you feel about that ridiculous, ridiculous show. I still can't believe that's the direction they went with that. That's still incredible to me.
For the longest time, I thought I fever dreamed that entire show because I watched it as a kid.
I bet you wish you had.
and I was like at that stage in my life where I couldn't remember if Donkey Kong was a video game first or a cartoon first. It was weird. So I convinced myself it never happened until I saw some clips of the show many, 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 many years later on YouTube and said,
it was a real
it's
thing.
Real.
Yep. Somehow. I would love to have been in the board meeting where like that came together, like Donkey Kong Country. We have a chance to make an animated show on Donkey Kong. What's the way to go? A musical. That's it. When I look at Donkey Kong Country, I think musical. Done. Like, how did that even happen?
It's weird, though, because at the same time, we could have gotten a lot worse than what we actually
That's
received.
True. That's true. Jackomon in our live audience chat agreed with you guys, saying they could see Illumination doing Kirby, Yoshi, or even Pikmin, but not Zelda, and especially not Xenoblade. Illumination Xenoblade is something I never wanted to even think about for a moment.
Anime studio is going to do Xenoblade if that ever happens, right?
Yeah. Like,
there's way someone else does.
I'm a bit surprised that we didn't get an anime studio for Zelda, to be honest. Again, that is probably my bias, because I really, really loved that Palutena trailer with everything I have.
My assumption is that Miyamoto wanted to make a live action Zelda specifically. Like, this wouldn't be happening if he didn't have the idea first.
Yeah.
Agreed. I think obviously, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve the deference that he gets at Nintendo, but I think that when Miyamoto has an idea, there are very few people who would be willing to be like, no, don't do that.
And like, they did a pretty good job with the Mario movie, so I'm certainly willing to wait it out and see how it turns out. This is, we've talked about this before, but this is not what I would have wanted, but it's what we're getting, so we might as well.
I truly believe that we are going to see liberties taken with Zelda that will make it almost feel like it's not Zelda. I think that because when I think about making Zelda work with real people, I'm like, there's so much as it stands. If you just copy pasted any Zelda game, there would be so much suspension of disbelief necessary that it would break my brain. Like, I'd be like, all right, the guy wears a really dorky hat and a tunic, and he has pointy ears, and for some reason Ganon is like arguably a Middle Eastern looking fellow with bright red hair. Like, none of it adds up to something that wouldn't feel like Demolition Man or something.
Right. It's really hard to visualize, even though we've known about it for a few months now. It's really still hard for me to visualize that live action Zelda movie in my head. I really can't imagine what it's going to look and feel like. And you could be right, Steve. It could culminate into something that does not necessarily feel like the Zelda that we know and love, in terms of it just being really different from what we expect.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we get something more akin to The Witcher. Like, something that is gritty and dark with a fantasy setting, but, and it has things that are true to the source material, but they've been heavily modified to kind of make more sense when real people are engaging in those activities.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, we should move on to our patron topics pretty soon, but we do have a few more super chats rolling in. We got a pair of super chats from Dissy and Duncan for $4 total. Thank you so much. And these are for you, Steve, I think. What do you think about Quan Chi in Mortal Kombat 1 and the Christmas fatality? Have you checked out either?
So I have not played any Quan Chi. So I don't know what his fatalities are, because I don't like to look them up, but I did get suckered into buying those seasonal fatalities. So I have the Christmas fatality and I used it. I will say that now that the bundle is complete, I would say Thanksgiving is number one.
Yeah.
Halloween is number two. And unfortunately Christmas is number three, because Thanksgiving has like an extreme disgust factor to it. There's like a lot
of barf. Really does.
Yeah. Halloween just makes me laugh, because the idea of punting someone's head in a box on someone's door, or in a pumpkin, I'm sorry, on someone's door, just I cackle every time I see it. And then the Christmas one is comparatively kind of weak. Like, I won't go super into the weeds on the description, but it's like you pin someone into the ground with a candy cane. And then Krampus comes along on his sleigh and like beheads them with the blade of the sleigh, and what their head like pops up off their body, and he like scoops it into a box and like lids it as a present. And then you hear him say "Merry Christmas" as he flies away. And I'm like, it's kind of funny, but it's like, it needs that one little bit extra. Well, trust me, I was trying not to describe it like in gory detail.
Right.
Like,
right.
Cause it's a little bloodier than that, but I think that it needs something to make it funnier. And I don't know what that is. Like the just a simple thing, like the Halloween one is easily the funniest one of the three. But
I agree. I just watched it while you were talking about it, and yeah, it's the weakest of the three in my opinion, for sure.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. Quan Chi though, if he doesn't have it, I'll just tell you this, Disney Duncan, if he doesn't have that fatality from MK4 where he like rips your leg off and then beats you to death with it, it's not for me. He needs to have that. That's an all-time classic. That's goated.
That's gotta have, yeah, that's a gotta have for sure. Leo Flo with a topical super chat for $5. Thank you so much. What is y'all's favorite winter/holiday stage in a video game? For me, it's Ice Paradise from Sonic Advance 2. And that's a really good one, actually. I love Ice Paradise Zone. Ooh. For me, I think it's Christmas Nights as a whole. I love Nights already. And just the whole holiday Christmas theming that Christmas Nights represents, it's just always so cozy to me. And yeah, I think Christmas Nights would be my answer for that.
Oh, that's a tough one for me.
Just the whole snow world in Diddy Kong Racing has a very Christmas attitude that I always enjoy. I used one of the songs for that in my Game of the Year video, actually.
Nice.
Oh, right. Yeah. Nice. You know
what? I'm gonna go with a decidedly darker pick. Crime Scene Cleanup, Santa's Workshop. There's like a... There's like a dedicated Steam game that's like you clean up crime scenes, and they released a standalone episode that is just Santa went nuts and murdered all the elves in the workshop, and you just have to clean up the workshop. Like that's it. You're just mopping up elf blood.
Oh my god.
Wow. Okay, that's, you said you're going with a darker answer. You didn't lie. You did not lie. All right. Well, not from that then. Going right back to Mortal Kombat 1, we've got another $15 from Disney Duncan. Thank you so much. Talking about while they love Mortal Kombat 1, they don't like, they can't access some of their content when the server's down, such as character skins and such. And the Switch version has gotten better load times. They're faster. They just need to fix those character models. Yeah, I heard the patch they recently introduced into the Switch version did make some things quite a bit better, but, you know, still, that's not, decidedly not the platform you want to play Mortal Kombat 1, yep, if you can help it, for sure. All right. And then one more for now before we move on to our patron topics. Alan Wilkinson with £2. Thank you so much. Mario Musical, Singing Wario and Waluigi, anyone? No, thank you. I don't need Singing Wario or Waluigi in my life.
No.
I'm good.
I'll take it.
I figured you would be the one to sing. Yeah, sure. Why not, Brandon? All right. Well, thank you all so much for your incredible generosity. I will read out the rest of the super chats at the end of the show, but for now it is time for our patron topics. And just as a reminder, if you support us on Patreon at or YouTube members at the producer tier or above, you can suggest topics just like the ones we are about to discuss right now. And Steve, why don't you go ahead and get us started this week, my man?
Yeah, mine comes from Zombie Joe. Zombie Joe wrote, whenever a conversation comes up about playing games online with other people, more often than not, it ends up turning into folks talking about the negative interactions they've had. Because of this, I'd like to flip the conversation around. What's some of the best and most wholesome interactions you guys have had playing with or against random people online? And so for those of you that know me, I am a huge Phantasy Star Online fan. I've been playing it since 2001. So I have made many lifelong friends through that game. Like, and I didn't know them from anywhere before firing up my Dreamcast and hopping online and playing with them. But these are, you know, so basically just through, you know, needing help from people to find a piece of loot or, you know, hunting for a piece of gear in a stage in PSO, I formed friendships with people that are still going to this day, like 20 something years later, some of my oldest friends. And, you know, we still get together and we play PSO2 New Genesis now. So to me, that is, that to me is a really cool, kind of interaction that I've had online. You know, I would say by and large, yeah, negative stuff comes when you play online with people, but, you know, those few online interactions that I've had that are positive, really stick with me.
Nice. Nice. I love that. Yeah. I definitely made some lifelong friends prior to online gaming through things like AOL message boards and stuff, but I can't think of any friends that I've made via like more recent online gaming, or yeah, but I guess I do have something of a doesn't involve a lifelong friend, but I do have a fun memory that back during the early days of online console gaming, I used to play Ridge Racer 6 on Xbox Live and Xbox 360, and so many late nights playing that game. But one of my very first Xbox Live friend that I made, like the day that I got my Xbox 360 with Perfect Dark Zero, was a person, and this is just the best username ever, literally named Barf01. I'll never forget it. The very first friend I made, Barf01. But man, that dude was cool. We played Ridge Racer 6 almost nightly together for months and months and months. And I don't know, have any idea where he is now. But I always have very fond memories of just that being my first experience. Barf01. We just talked about games, got really competitive in Ridge Racer 6, and just made as you said Zombie Joe, like so many online interactions are negative, and I don't play a lot of games online these days anyway, and usually when I do, it's something like Smash or Mario Kart. I do play Fall Guys, but that's with friends in a certain party, not like with random people, and Rocket League, but same thing. So I do look back on that fondly as just being like, this dude Barf01, first friend I ever made on Xbox Live, and we just had so many late nights together playing Ridge Racer 6. It was super cool.
Oh,
that name, right?
Oh, go ahead, Brandon.
That's just lovely. I love that.
That yeah. name is perfect. You can't make that up. It's so good.
I do have to say, like, I'm not gonna say the names of these folks, but there was one point at which my best friend and I were playing Destiny, and we decided to do PvP, and we got completely rocked by a team. And you know, sometimes when you're playing a competitive game like a shooter or something, and you wonder if those people are like really IRL friends or they're coordinating with each other, we had no doubt, because all three of these guys, their PSN IDs were like disgusting slang terms for the female anatomy. And oh, I was God. Like, oh, these guys know each other. Like, oh, uh-huh. there was no doubt. And like, I didn't even think about it. Nick was like, yeah, these guys know each other. You should check their names. And I pulled up their name, and I probably lost a good 5 minutes. I was just wheezing. Like, I was like, these guys are terrible and disgusting, but I respect the level of friendship it must take for three people to go in that hard on a bit.
Yeah.
For what me, about you, I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but I'm about to talk about Monster Hunter.
Who's surprised?
What?
What a shocker.
One of my best friends, we went to college together for, I went to the one school for a year and a half before changing schools. And we were like acquainted at this point, but we didn't really hang out or anything. A couple of years later, Monster Hunter World came out, and he ended up picking up the game. World had a kind of guild system where everybody could sync up to a guild, and when you went online, it automatically put you in a lobby of people in that guild, which saved a lot of time. So we just played a lot of Monster Hunter World online together, and ended up fostering our friendship a lot. We played through World together. We played through the entirety of Rise. We've gone back and played Tri together, Monster Hunter 1. It's like I don't want to call it the cornerstone of our friendship, but it feels like our friendship wouldn't exist if Monster Hunter hadn't been there to make it happen, you know?
That's cool.
And yeah, I really, really treasure his friendship and all the time we've spent playing games together. Outside of Monster Hunter, some of you know that I played Dragon Quest X online for the first time last year, because the English translation efforts of fans have made that possible. And one day when I was logged in, I had a Japanese player, a noob Japanese player, start the game. And I was just a little bit ahead that I kind of knew what the first steps of the game were. And we couldn't communicate because of the language barrier. So they just followed me around, and I took them to all the places they needed to go. And we just had nonverbal communication, lots of emoting at one another to, you know, say thanks and, you know, hype moments and everything like that. And, you know, then eventually they logged off, did their best to say thank you despite the language barrier. And it was honestly just one of the most pleasant online experiences I've ever had.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that.
That's great. No, in kind of a similar vein, this isn't online or anything, but like I would not have a lot of the best friends I do today if it weren't for DDR. Like if DDR did not exist and I didn't entrench myself in that community, and I would never have the circle of friends that I do today. So I totally get what you're talking about, Brandon. Like seriously, that's awesome. Well, cool. Well, thank you for that very wholesome topic, Zombie Joe. That was great. And Brandon, it looks like you have been able to pick out a topic now.
Yeah, mine comes from Dead Alpha Lion, asking, what has been the best or most memorable backseat gaming experience you've personally been a part of, where you were sitting beside someone playing through a game and were just along for the ride? I actually have the opposite situation, where I was the person playing and I had someone backseating me.
Okay.
And that was my friend Joe, who you all know. She did our 3D logo animation at the start of all of our videos.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's great. She's the one who got me to play The Outer Wilds, and she sat next to me while I experienced that game all the way through, because Outer Wilds is the kind of game where you can play it once, and after you've played it, you can't realistically ever play it again, for reasons. So she got to re-experience the game vicariously through me, and got to bear witness to all of my reactions to everything that game does. And it was just a really good experience for the both of us, and I treasure that memory a lot.
Oh, that's cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Play The Outer Wilds.
Yeah. I've heard amazing things about it, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and a great game to play with someone else sitting next to you, for sure.
Cool. Huh. I don't know. Steve, do you have an answer?
I do. Mine is, I'm going to cast you back to the winter of 1991. I was sitting in my room. You have to kind of understand my living situation when I was nine to understand this, but I was my brother and I shared a room, and we had bunk beds, and you know, we didn't have a ton of stuff growing up, so we had like the TV in the living room, and after much begging, my mom got us like an old TV for our room. So we had like a little like 17-inch TV in there.
Cool.
And my brother and I would fight for console time because, you know, like we had a Genesis and a Super Nintendo, and only one TV to play both of them on. So in a rare moment of cooperation, my brother, who was almost 12 at the time. Yeah. He ran down to the video store on his bike and came back, and he was like, I need to borrow your Super Nintendo, because the Super Nintendo was just mine. My mom, or rather my dad, who had just like moved in with my mom, like as like a peace offering to me, bought me a Super Nintendo for my birthday that year. And so he was like, hey kid, I got you a Super Nintendo, can we be friends? And I was like, you've won my heart, man. And so my brother, he's like, I need to borrow your Super Nintendo. I got the new Zelda game, bah, from the video store. And I was like, we will do this. And he plugged it in, and, you know, like I didn't really have a leg to stand. I wanted to play it, but ultimately I kind of understood he used his allowance to rent it. So for like 48 hours, I just watched him play this game. Like, I would maybe fall asleep, wake up, he'd still be playing. He played through all of A Link to the Past in one sitting.
Oh, my God.
And it was one of those things where watching him play it, I was just like, this game is so cool. I want to play this game. And it was gone before I could play it, because he had it for, like, the one day rental. And he just was determined to beat it in that time, and he did. And he shipped it back, and it just kind of started my love of Zelda. Like, we had Zelda 2 on the NES, awesome, but like this was the game where I was like, okay, whatever the next Zelda is, I'm getting that. And of course Nintendo's like, you're gonna be waiting a while. But well, you know, when it did come out, it kind of was a big part of the reason I was so obsessed with Ocarina of Time. I just loved watching my brother play Link to the Past, and like just, you know, watching him get the Master Sword and telling him, like, go over there, slash that bush, try that, like, you nice. Know, and he'd be like, shut up, but then he'd go do it, and we would, you know, I just had, that's one of my core memories as a kid, is just watching his insane one session that, and you know, through the game, and just being like, damn, I want to play the next game. If Mike likes it that much, I know I'm gonna love Zelda just as much. And yeah, he was right.
That's awesome.
That was definitely like the best time I ever had watching somebody play.
Oh, that's really cool. That's awesome. I still remember one of my best friend at the time, when we were playing A Link to the Past when it was still, you know, new. He got really upset at me because he thought that I like had screwed up his game somehow, or soft locked his game when Link turns into a bunny going to the Dark World for the first time, and he thought there was no way back out. So he actually started a new game. He blamed me, thinking I ruined the game or messed up his game. And I'm like, what? No. But anyway, that's not my story. No, so Dark B, Andy, actually, you mentioned in live audience chat if I was going to say my wife playing Chrono Trigger, because you remember me watching my wife play it for the first time, experiencing it. And actually, I didn't get to watch. I mean, I watched a little bit, but she was playing the DS version. So I couldn't really, I definitely, you know, we talked about it, and I got to experience it vicariously through her. And it was really exciting for me to have her play my favorite game of all time and us talk about it. But I didn't get to really watch, because that would have been kind of annoying, just kind of peering into her DS's screen the whole time. But it is, what I am going to say is related to my wife, and that is when I played Final Fantasy VI with her. And I say played with, but I still kind of backseated, because what a lot of people don't realize is that the original Super Nintendo version of FF6 had a two-player mode, where you could actually go into the settings menu and assign different party members to the player one or player two controller in battle. Yeah, a lot of people didn't realize that, and they took that out of the subsequent versions, like the Steam versions, the Pixel remasters. I kind of wish they brought it back. But anyway, so we, if you know the story of how we met, basically the night we met, one of the things I found out about her was that she loved video games, and her favorite game of all time, she was like, it's kind of dumb, it's probably something you never heard of. And I'm like, try me. And she said, well, it's this like kind of little known Super Nintendo RPG called Earthbound. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to get your number. Oh, what? Earthbound. And so thankfully it all worked out, but she had not gotten to play FF6. And so I was like, okay, that's such a great entry point into the series. If you love Earthbound, you love Chrono Trigger, let's play FF6 together. And so basically what I did was I played with her by controlling two party members, but she controlled everything else outside of battle. Like, she was doing all the exploration, figuring everything out on her own. And it was just, you know, FF6 was my very first JRPG. So to kind of get to be there with her and experience everything kind of for the first time through her eyes, and still kind of get to play it with her too, is easily the most memorable backseat gaming experience I've ever had. You're right, Caitlin, FF9 had co-op too. A lot of people don't realize that it did. But yeah, so for me, getting to experience FF6 for the first time again through my wife, and see her reactions to all the characters and Kefka and all the crazy stuff he does, was just, and the music, and of course, getting, you know, all that for the first time with her again, definitely my most memorable backseat gaming experience, if you want to call it that, for sure. Well, another wholesome topic. Thank you for that. That was Alpha Lion. Yeah. Thank you so much. All right. And then my topic today comes from Ryan Hanley, who asks, is there an upward trend of more niche games getting official translations? For example, Switch is getting Game Center CX 1+2 in February. The first DS port was localized. I have that game. And the program itself seems to have a decent following in the US. Is this another Famicom Detective Club situation, or likely no chance? And it does seem to me like we are getting a little bit, like a few more of these niche games brought over to the US. As you mentioned, Famicom Detective Club, but we're also getting another Code Recollection coming out. And I know we got Trace Memory in the US, but we never got the sequel to Trace Memory in the US. So it was only in Europe and Japan. So I feel like there is actually a bit of a trend of these, you know, niche games being brought over, maybe as digital only releases, but still being brought over nonetheless. And I can't say that I would be too shocked if some publisher did pick up the Game Center CX games, because I think that would be really cool. And as you mentioned, the first DS port did come here. It was called Retro Game Challenge, I believe. And it was such a cool little game. I have very fond memories of it. And so personally, I hope it does. But I could actually see it happening in the current gaming landscape, with more and more niche titles being brought over, especially with stuff like visual novels. We're seeing so many visual novels brought over now that never would have seen the light of day in the West before. So what do you guys think about this?
I feel like we're getting more niche releases. Now, I might have missed it. Are we actually getting the CX games translated, like, officially?
No.
No, that's the question. Do we think it can happen in the current
landscape? I think it can happen, and I think, you know, the Switch is a wildly popular console. And so I think that calculus is really the most important factor for a publisher, right? They're going to look at the install base and what they think they can move on that. And I think ignoring the Switch in this day and age is really not a smart move. Like, obviously the writing is on the wall that Nintendo's ready to move on to something else, you know, even if they're not outwardly saying so. But I think if you look at the original game on DS that we got out here, what was it? It was renamed to something else.
Yeah, it was Retro Game Challenge, and cool as hell.
Yeah, I have cool my game. Copy. I actually just put it up in the studio, which is why I knew where Afterburner was too.
Nice.
So I have like a retro game shelf in the studio that I'm working on, and I had put my copy of Retro Game Challenge up there. That game is worth a lot. Like it is a fairly expensive DS game to get your hands on these days, I believe. Like, not prohibitively so, but definitely it's one of those ones that has gone up in value. At least last time I checked, which admittedly was a long time ago. Oh yeah, look, it's $100 for a complete copy on eBay right now.
That's not surprising at all. So, yeah,
you know, I mean, the loose cartridge goes for $42-43, so clearly it's appreciated a bit, which not lots of games don't. But I think that there's a good chance that they'll look at that and be like, oh, it became kind of a collector's item. Yeah, we should probably release this one, maybe even in limited quantities like they did with Retro Game Challenge. But yeah, it's one of, I don't know. I think that there's definitely a good chance. I wouldn't write anything off on the Switch at this point. Like, I think if they could get more games running on, I mean, any console that sells over 100 million units, publishers are going to take seriously. So
it's more of a licensing problem, but look at Taiko no Tatsujin. We're getting those games not every territory, but a lot of territories now, and all of the Japanese songs are intact. They're not doing what they did with the original Taiko Drum Master and just replacing the soundtrack.
Right, that's a great point.
So I do think we're trending towards getting more games. Like, it's happening a lot on Switch already. A lot of legacy titles that never came here are getting translations officially. So yeah, I wouldn't write it off.
Yeah, and you know, we've got a lot of great points coming in from a live audience. Azrin says this is following the great Ace Attorney Chronicles as well. That's a great point. Both GCM of Chaos and Alpha Lion mentioned Live Alive and Trials of Mana. So that's a great point. We're getting a lot of that stuff now. Not that Trials of Mana is niche, but for, you know, it never came to the West before now. So yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that's certainly possible in today's gaming landscape. And it may just be a digital only release for Switch, but even that would be more than enough, I would think, because these are games that really should be experienced. They so perfectly, or at least the one I played, Retro Game Challenge, so perfectly captured the experience of gaming in the 80s, in the pre-internet age. It's hard to explain how unless you played it, but it really does capture the vibe of gaming in the 80s. And it's a really special experience. I definitely recommend seeking out if you can, and hopefully the the 1+2 compilation will be localized here to make that easier than ever.
At the very least, like, technically speaking, you could still buy it. You could play it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
might not understand it.
Right, exactly. All right, and then really quick, we decided to do a group topic just because in the spirit of the Game of the Year season, we got a couple of topics anchored around Game of the Year, so we picked one just to mention very quickly. Dark B Andy asks, related to Derek and my top games of 2023 videos, what makes certain DLCs be categorized as its own game and why? So, for example, I categorized Xenoblade Chronicles 3 Future Redeemed as its own game. I believe you did too, Brandon.
I did.
And yes, and I also categorized Horizon Forbidden West Burning Shores as its own game. And so they want to know what the standard for doing that is, or our standard for doing that is. And for me, I guess kind of what it comes down to is just, is it a story DLC? Like, of course, games like Rocket League, like live service games, they're always getting new seasons. But that's, to me, that feels different than a separate story campaign that is added on to enhance or lengthen the original experience. Like, Burning Shores is a separate game, just like it's a separate story and a separate area away from the main game that has its own story beats, its own final boss, its own new enemies to fight, its own new upgrade trees and such. Same thing with something like Future Redeem. That's its own 30, 40 hour campaign with its own completely bespoke areas, right? So that's kind of, it's a little bit fuzzy, I guess, but that's kind of how I feel like if it's meaty story DLC, then it kind of does count as its own thing. But what's your rationale for this, guys?
Sorry, I had to stand up to get an example. Go ahead, Steve.
No worries.
For me, I think I might be kind of biting on what Brandon's going to say here, but if you, one major criteria is if you package that DLC and sell it as a standalone.
Oh, sure.
You know, I think at one point Miles Morales was considered to be DLC. I think we've all long since agreed that that's a full game. Yeah. But like Undead Nightmare was at one point packaged and sold separately.
Oh, yeah.
The Zeno, you know, Torna, that was packaged and sold separately. Stuff like that is a real easy argument. Like, if you can find the DLC as a standalone on shelves, it's definitely worth considering as a separate entity. But I also think I agree with you, Ash, in that story elements, you know, to it. Like, if it adds a story, like I included Best Narrative for Valhalla this year, which is clearly a DLC and a free one at that. And it will not be sold as a standalone at any point, I'm sure. But it adds to the narrative of the game, which to me, I would say, you know, when something adds to the lore of a game, that's an easy one for me to say, well, we should consider this because it now taking that alongside the game to which it was added, it makes for a different end result, right? Like now, if you play God of War Ragnarok, the ending is no longer the ending. You have to play to Valhalla to get the true ending.
Right.
For me, I come from kind of an interesting perspective because in the past, Monster Hunter, what it would release as a DLC expansion used to be released as a second individual game. So like these two games are the same game, but this entry has twice the content of this one. Like, so when they release an expansion like Iceborne or Sunbreak, it is essentially, for all intents and purposes, a new game. But now they're just sold as DLC packages that add on to the originals. So for me, it just kind of falls under the same category. Like, is the content that they're releasing in the DLC comparable to what was in the base game? Because like Monster Hunter are not story-based games. Like, there's monsters and gear and new maps, and that's what this added to this game. So as long as they're extending what made that original game what it is, I think I would count that.
Fair. All fair points all around. It's a little bit, you know, fuzzy, I guess, but I think all the rationales we've kind of talked about all certainly work. Were you going to say something, Steve?
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I thought I heard I cut you off there. But yeah. And then there were some other great points brought up in our live audience chat, like Kingdom Hearts 3 Remind and The Last of Us Left Behind. And yeah, so it's an interesting topic for sure. But it's something I just kind of had to feel. And I was like, no, Burning Shores felt like a separate game from Forbidden West that really fixed a lot of the issues I had with Forbidden West's ending initially. And I'm like, if it can turn me around on something like that from the original game, I think that qualifies as its own experience being, you know, as influential as it was for me. So yeah, just kind of something you have to feel out. But that does bring us to the end of our patron topics for the week. So thank you all so much. And as a reminder, if you support us on on Patreon or YouTube members at the producer tier or above, you can suggest topics for us to discuss each week, like the ones we just did. And now we've got a few more super chats to read out, and then we are going to head out into our patron exclusive post show. So first off, we have a super chat from Blaker36 for $2 with a cute little computer mouse icon, and that's it. But thank you very much, Blaker. Two Canadian dollars from Always Asians. Thank you so much. Saying, as a Canadian, I apologize for the DKC show. You know what? It's something I love to hate watch. It's so goofy and weird. You don't even need to apologize for it. In some weird way, I'm glad it exists. So no worries. And we've got another combined $20 from Disney Duncan across three Super Chats. Thank you so much. Saying they don't see a Nintendo Cinematic Universe happening, but they could see a Donkey Kong spinoff and a Luigi's Mansion film, which have been rumored to be in the works, which like the Shrek films have done with the Puss in Boots movies. So, yeah, I think I agree with that. Yeah. Also, best video game villain of the year is Ganondorf. Best movie villain of the year, Bowser. Worst character of the year, Nitara from Mortal Kombat 1. I definitely agree about Nitara. That is definitely her voice is so bad. Oh, God. And then finally, good night, GVG. Merry Christmas. Or as they say in MLP, Happy Hearts Warming Eve. Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you, Duncan, as well. And thank you so much for your continued generosity. It is wonderful having you in our community. And then finally, we have RecBCQ with $5. Thank you so much, saying Feature Redeemed had Dilf, Rex, and Shulk, so it's a 100 out of 10, LOL. Truths were spoken this day. I can't argue with that objective truth. So that does bring us to the end of the show. But before we do our usual executive producer patron readout, we have a little bit of an announcement, a special announcement. So as you know, the Game Orb has been sponsoring us at our highest Patreon tier for so long now, and they are not going to be staying at that tier going into the new year, so this will be one of their last sponsorship readouts. However, we have good news. They have actually met all the requirements they need to become a Twitch affiliate, and they've been striving to do that for a long time now, and they've made it. So in honor of this being one of their last sponsorship readouts, they would like everyone here, if they could, to go raid them on their Twitch channel right now at the end of the show and try to help boost their numbers up to make them reach affiliate. And if you could do that for us and for him, we'd really appreciate it, because as I always say, he has been supporting us so much from the very beginning on our highest Patreon tier. We appreciate it so much. So if you could go raid his channel right now, would super appreciate it. I am posting the link in YouTube chat right now. It is twitch.tv/Eddie_TheGameOrb. So if you just go follow him on Twitch, rate his stream right now, we would super, super appreciate that. And Eddie, thank you so much for all of your amazing support over the years. Thankfully, you are remaining in the community and on our Patreon, which we really appreciate. But we totally understand you couldn't stay at this tier forever. Yeah. So thank you so very much, everyone in our community. If you go show them your love, we would really, really appreciate it. And now, speaking of love, we have to give a special shout out to all of our patrons at the producer tier and above for helping to make everything we do here happen, because we could not keep lights on without you. So thank you so very much. And then also, as always, we have to give an extra special shout out to all of our patrons at the executive producer tier and above. And those fine, amazing, incredible folks include Brandon Bovia, Cutie Caitlin, Fangs, Z Patty, Sky Blue Flames, Eastman 23, Adam O'Sullivan, Richard Herrera, Logan Daniel, The D-Pad, Blake, Joy Content, Angel Martinez, Vedron, Joshua Hunter, Benny Yao, Azran127, Black King, Joseph Rutkin, Geeky Griffin, Lucky Wonderfish, Wataniac, Top Dog 23100, Young Ben Kenobi, Andrew Medeiros, Darchi, Becca, Michael McCaw, Matthew Wong, Goron Amber CPHT, Too Much Spaghetti, Bane 400, Ascaron 809, Ryaner, Rain and Clouds, The Game Orb, Super Gamer Dude 101, Mercury, Ravelox, Rosa Pardo Bowling,
Hi Mom,
Skull Kid Tiger, Darksteel 01, Jason Uloa, Jaden Buck, Cystic Warrior 29, DJ Jurassic, Derek, Colin, Blaystar 25, Mumbling Yeti, Cameron Sharp, Keel, Brendan Hesse, Hustlebun, Noah Fitterer, Calvin Atkinson, Brainchild, The Entire State of Wisconsin, Jim Wakelin, Aramis Baramis, Kyle the Monarch, Dat Alpha Lion, Lord Metarex, Blaze Collard, Eric, Cat EV Person 5, Peyton Thiel, Mega Beatman True Blue Reviews, Ryan Hanley, The Game Jamie, Alex, and last but certainly not least, Zombie Joe. Thank you so very much. Happy holidays to you and your families out there. We will see you next week for the next episode of GVG Cast, and have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
Bye, everyone.